This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. The search for community in the sea of American individualism reaches back to the early 19th century with the religious utopian communities like those founded by the Shakers, stretching from Oneida, New York to Pleasant Hill, Kentucky, as well as secular utopian communities like New Harmony, Indiana, founded by Robert Owen. In the 21st century, at a time when people claim hundreds of friends on social media but feel increasingly isolated, the search for co-living and co-housing options is growing across the country and in Cincinnati. One resident of a co-living house here in Cincinnati described his experience this way.
My name is Reggio Rodriguez. I live in the Brewster House of Education and Transformation. You know, it's so easy to find yourself living by yourself or living with like two other roommates and kind of feeling like you're alone, but living in a community house really adds like a community aspect to your life that I can't even begin to really describe well. It really does bring you back down to earth and reminds you that the world is so much bigger than what you think it is. And so often in this culture and this society, we dehumanize each other. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest thing I've gotten from living in a communal home, especially an intentional communal home, is that it reminds me how big the world actually is, and reminds me of like how small my world vision may be, but the person next to me might have a totally different vision, and it just brings me back down to earth. So,
to discuss contemporary co-living and co-housing movements, we are joined today by Mac House resident Nick Shaver and co-founder and resident of Kunsthaus, John Blatchford. To join our discussion, you can call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Nick, John, welcome to Cincinnati Edition. It's really good to have you here today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
John, there's a lot of terms that are getting thrown around here in this introduction, and I'd like to back up and make sure that we've got some basis for our discussion. So let's go through a few of them. Intentional community.
Mm-hmm.
What's that mean?
Yeah, I think there are a few maybe examples of this in the U.S. and certainly abroad, where it's a group of people living together and they might have a certain purpose that could be like a lower impact on the environment. There are hacker houses that are focused on building technology. So from my perspective, it seems like, you know, a group of people living together that have a focus on a certain thing.
So it's not just they accidentally end up in the same apartment building or in the same neighborhood on a street.
Right. And there might be some way to filter the people living in the house and make sure their intentions are aligned.
Okay.
Yeah.
And would you agree with that, Nick? Is that sort of what you live in a Mac house. Is that sort of – do you have an intention? Is there an intentional part of the Mac house?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, first of all, what you were saying about intentional communities going on, you know, for hundreds of years, in essence, of course, you know, the people have always been getting together for a purpose, like you say, religious communities, even some non-religious communities. So our community in general and specific is, so it's called the McGregor House, short for Mac House. It was started when I read this book called The Irresistible Revolution, and it was about this guy in Philadelphia who was kind of doing something similar to what I wanted to do. He was living out in a low-income neighborhood and just kind of being good to his neighbors and providing, you know, through relationships. And that really inspired me. So I was like, oh, that's kind of what I want to live my life when I grow up and become older. And so I bought this house, you know, about 9 years ago. And our intention is kind of that we draw people who are also interested in like and surface minded and wanting to help the community and serve others. And so that's kind of what draws us together. Besides the community aspect of just helping each other and making those connections to a real life individual and not isolating yourself in an apartment as well.
Right.
So it's two aspects for sure.
John, for Kunsthaus, What would you say the intentionality is?
Yeah, we might be a little more broad, and our intention really is to bring people together. And I think it's a lot of what you mentioned. We all have access to social media. In theory, we should be way more connected than we've ever been. You can text and call and all that. And yeah, it sort of strikes home for me. A friend of mine actually recently passed, and you know, he was a good high school friend, and I hadn't talked to him probably in 4 years. Although we're connected on Facebook, in theory, I should know what's going on in his life, and I had no idea. So I think our intention is that people are living together. They're in some way sort of forced into space together and to interact. And even the clip that you played, the idea that you're forced to interact with people that might not be like you or exactly like you or have different opinions, is really healthy, certainly in 2018.
Yeah, where there's people tend to go apart.
Yeah, exactly.
Than come together.
And I think one thing to add on what John is saying, I think bringing those people together and almost forcing people to live together brings those challenges. And so the difference, I would say, between just like a normal roommate situation, we might be just living with two or three people, is like with the intentional community, your goal is to resolve those issues and grow because of them, you know, and not just allow kind of some things to fester and just like move out.
Well, I want to explore that a little bit more and find out what those issues are and how you resolve them.
Yeah, that's it.
Couple more terms, co-living versus co-housing.
Sure, yeah.
What is this?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've read a bit about both, and I think essentially co-housing is maybe a little more separate, and I think there are a lot of examples of this in Europe since certainly the 60s and onward, where you have your own private house, your family lives there, it's its own separate unit, but then, for example, there are shared gardens, a shared kitchen where everyone gets together once a week and has a meal. For me, I think co-housing is a little more separate, and there's actually often ownership there where people are buying a unit and it's part of this sort of collaborative housing environment. And then I would say co-living is more maybe the, you know, grown-up dorm environment. People have their own private space, but they're literally sharing a kitchen, they're sharing a living room, they might be sharing bathrooms. So it's even, I would say, more communal, but as we're sort of alluding to, more room for issues potentially.
So Nick, how long has Mac House been around? When you alluded to this, it sounds like were you the instigator? Were you the person who was sort of pushing it?
I brought about five of us together to kind of push this vision forward. About 8 years ago, about five friends, I gave them these books to read called The Irresistible Revolution. They read it. They were inspired by it. And they're like, yes, Nick, let's do this. So they were collaborators in the initiation of it. And without them, it couldn't have been successful. So it was awesome.
So about 8 years. And what about Quinn's House?
Yeah, we started about 2 years ago. And we were maybe also inspired by stuff that I've read. And there are companies now forming across the country, especially on the coast, focused on co-living. WeWork is a big sort of shared office company in the same vein, but they started a WeLive group a few years ago, and they've sort of slowed down with that, so not sure what's happening there. But there are other ones, including there's like Common in New York City, there's Rome, there's now they're popping up everywhere and actually getting a lot of funding. So we approach it as something that's really important, something in my life where I've always lived in apartments and I have normally not known the people in my building, which I think is pretty sad for all of us moving to cities. But we wanted to see if we could grow certainly a local model and even a national model of what co-living would look like that would actually, you know, make money. And
from what I was able to read, it sounds like some of the drive on the, at least on the coast, where housing is just so expensive that there's a very practical side of this too, right? By pooling people's resources, maximizing the ability to get a decent size, decent amount of space for the number of people who are there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the main driver, certainly in New York, San Francisco, Seattle, you see it popping up even DC and now Chicago, is I would say primarily cost. Rather than everybody having two bedrooms, a living room, a kitchen that they all then have to pay for every month or as a condo or whatever, a lot of that becomes shared. So you have a small private space that's comfortable, well-maintained and all that, but then you're sharing everything else. And so it can, you know, cut the cost in a lot of cases by half. And then I think a plus in a lot of those cities is that there's this community environment and you get to meet people and interact and all that.
Yeah, there's a website called IC.org, and it's a national database of all the national communities around. And I think Cincinnati is definitely not high on the list of a ton of them. Right. And I think exactly for that reason is because the need isn't there for financial reasons because you can find a very affordable housing. But does it mean that there isn't a need for it for community reasons?
Exactly. You know,
there's still a desire out there.
Right. I think that's what we've run into a bit of believe in the concept. And I think it's important for every human on earth, really. But the cost factor isn't that much here. And especially as you get to the outer neighborhoods, you know, if you can have a studio for the same price as a private room, most people are going to just go for a private studio.
Okay. So there's a practical side of this. With the Mac House, what sort of the larger mission of the Mac House? I mean, you said it, you know, it's not just actually, community.
Yeah, so there's actually three tiers, three pillars that we say that we do. One is we provide affordable housing to people who work in the nonprofit sector, because oftentimes salaries just aren't as high when you're, you know, working as, you know, maybe as a teacher or as an AmeriCorps member. The second tier is providing a community for all those people who are living this life of service in the nonprofit sector. And then the third pillar is also being good neighbors to our neighbors, because we are in a low-income neighborhood intentionally to kind of serve our neighbors. And one thing that we've done every year, we have an annual block party, and that's just been an amazing experience working with our neighbors who've been there for 40, 50 years in Mount Auburn, and collaborating with them to create this annual block party that brings the community together, intergenerational, interracial. It's been a beautiful experience.
And when you do that, do you find that there are people who don't know each other?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It brings people together who have, who might know each other, but not have seen each other in 10 years, or who've never met before as
right.
well.
Even if they've been living in there.
Yes. Yeah, or not have been forced to interact with each other, you know, maybe just see each other in passing and never make a connection.
Well, Nick, we talked to your wife, our co-producer, our Selena Reeder, talked with a number of people, including your wife, and she commented about what it was like to be raising a young family in this sort of environment. Let's listen to your wife, Melissa.
My name is Melissa Shaver. I live in the Mac House. I've lived here for 5.5 years. Being a stay-at-home mom, I'm here almost all the time. And so I get to see people, some people we eat breakfast with every morning because that's their schedule. Some people come home from work while we're having dinner and we get to check in with them. And it's really brought, I think, a more familial feeling to the house because we are living a family life here. You know, we have grandparents over, we have dinner every night, we have play dates with other kids, we have a swing set in the backyard. I think that our kids bring out the best in our roommates because they bring out their playfulness, they bring out their compassion, they bring out their patience. But the other roommates, I mean, it's invaluable when you're trying to do dishes and you have a screaming toddler to have somebody who will sit down and play whatever in their play kitchen, even if it's just for 15 minutes. It's this incredible gift to a parent to have that, you know, just other wonderful adult relationships. And, you know, we have someone here who speaks French, someone who speaks Farsi. And, you know, we're trying to teach Maggie Spanish, and she's learning things every day, you know, from them. It's just a wonderful resource to have.
Well, I've got to let you comment. I mean, it was your wife. We've given her airtime now. But what strikes me there is whoever, in this case, if there's a full-time parent staying at home, raising children, that can be a very lonely existence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not just for women, more and more men are doing that as well. And that's one of the things that jumped out at me in that soundbite.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, because sometimes we have people who have different jobs. They might work in the evenings, work on the weekends. So they are here during the day in a time when she would be completely isolated when I'm out just with her two children, two young three-year-old Maggie and our 4-month-old Arlo. So it's been a wonderful community building experience for her too in that aspect, and allowing it to be really sustainable and allowing her to continue wanting to do that in a meaningful way.
Yeah, and you're not just sharing costs, you're sharing a burden when you live with other people and you have a relationship with them. And, you know, not that kids are necessarily a burden, but you know, having to deal with them day in and day out, especially as a, you know, stay-at-home mom, to have people around that can help you out and pick up some slack and you can do the same back to them. Is part of the idea.
I mean, children can really enliven anything.
Yeah. That's one thing that she said, you know, talking about how it brings out the best in people.
Right.
I've noticed, I mean, I've been there for 8 years when we were all kind of like 24-year-old when I first started this, you know, and we're all young right out of college to now we're probably split over 30 and under 30. And you see a totally different side of roommates when you start to have the kid. They're so supportive, so anything you want, anything that would help the child, because they see the vulnerability in the child and they just want to provide the level of support that has just been really beautiful to see.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Co-living efforts in Cincinnati and America are designed to break down the walls that separate us. One set of walls that have been thrown up recently are intended to isolate America from people of other nations and cultures. Some co-living arrangements intentionally try to bridge those gaps. We talk with Sohar, a resident of Mackhaus and an international student from Iran.
My name is Sohar. My family name is Hidari Fard. I'm an international PhD student here, and I was not aware of how much it affects you when you don't have the community that you grew up in, you're familiar with, and you're put in a different context, in different situation, different city, different world, different language. It's important to have people that you are connected enough with, that you can be yourself and not worry about how they judge you, how, like, and you know that they love you. And I think I loved living here because it gave me that in a really strong sense. If I have to change my life plans to stay here longer, I will. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because this is family. It seems to me, I gather, that the people here are a family.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I don't know how you want to define a family. But people are well connected. At the same time, they give each other enough space that they don't feel obligated to be there or be a part of it.
To discuss contemporary co-living and co-housing efforts in Greater Cincinnati, we are joined today by the co-founder and resident of Kunsthaus, John Blatchford, and Mackhaus resident, Nick Shaver. To join our discussion, you can call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Now, that all sounds wonderful, but, you know, family was a theme there that sort of came up. We all grew up in families. We know that families don't necessarily always get along. So, John, in the experiences that you've had, what are the biggest flashpoints in where problems have to be solved?
Yeah, so I think part of it gets to how to choose the people that live there, if you do. And that was a question we got more than anything when we first started. How are you going to choose people? How are you going to make sure it's a good fit? And part of the motivation was we wouldn't really choose people. I think that's part of the idea, is that people are coming together and they're hopefully learning because they're different. So we haven't, you know, we do a background check. We want to screen to make sure that there isn't anything, you know, overly dangerous. But besides that, you know, anybody can live there. And we've had people in their 50s, and we've had currently a 20-year-old that lives there. So it's sort of run the gamut. But in terms of issues that come up, you know, we clean all the common spaces regularly. I think that's a main one of cleanliness and, I guess, hygiene or whatever else, just cleaning up.
When you say we, who's...
So we as Kunsthaus, you know, from the outside, technically, clean the house. For example, we have a building in Walnut Hills called Kling Flats, and that's sort of our first test. And it's 6 private rooms, shared bathrooms, shared kitchens. And so as part of that, we clean all the common spaces regularly, and that sort of takes that
friction out.
Rather
than the residents cleaning it.
Right, and that's sort of what we've tried out. And I think if a house could decide rules to clean, that would be a much more communal way, and that would help people resolve conflict and probably bring them together. But, you know, from us on the outside, we're like, okay, we need to – it's only every few weeks, so there's still going to be a mess in between, and they have to figure that out. But
can you add our house to your rotation?
Yeah.
can you clean our community?
So what about in Mackhaus? What are the biggest challenges?
Well, it's exactly what John is saying. Yeah. But the way we resolve the cleanliness issue is we do have those meetings. We have those weekly meetings, bi-weekly, so every 2 weeks. And we talk and we bring everything up, you know, bring it all to the table, you know. And
yeah.
It's been a growth. So when we first started, it was a lot more contention, it was a lot harder to resolve cleaning the dishes,
right,
cleaning up common spaces, and it definitely took time and commitment. But with that intentionality and sticking with it, you know, 8.5 years in, it goes very smoothly. People, you know, fit into the culture of cleanliness, which is a really big deal.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be interested, like, what's sort of your schedule? Is it there is like a weekly
meeting? Yeah, so we used to, when we first started, we had weekly chores and then you'd rotate it every week.
Right.
And then when we found out with that, after like a year of doing that, you're like, wait a second, you know, it doesn't become fair when one person doesn't do their chore, then you're doing 2 weeks chores. And what we found what really works is you pick a chore and you stick with it, you know, for 6 months or for a year until you want to change. And that's been really helpful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you tried positive reinforcement?
Yes.
I have lived I have lived in a situation where the big problem was the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the best luck we ever had with it, despite all of the house meetings to try to decide who was going to do what when, was rewarding with candy. That if you actually did it, and you think, oh, this isn't going to work, it did though.
We have a, ours is kind of a chore check-in. And so people have to like self, you know, proclaim, did I do it or did I not do it? And that kind of just like self check-in kind of has been helpful.
Well, what about at Mac House in terms of people coming in? John was sort of talking about at their place, they're not screening too much. They're just making sure things are safe.
Right.
What about at Mac House?
Yeah, so we have an online application and we don't advertise very much because we, you know, don't often have open bedrooms, you know, and that's what's awesome, have other kids' house and other communities to help serve that need. You know, for example, this summer we had 9 or 10 applicants for one or two open rooms, and that's without, that's just word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the way it works is an online application and then we interview and then we kind of make that decision. And our ideal is there's one applicant for one open room, you know, because we want, it kind of draws people who are energetic and interesting and you'd want to live with anyways. And because of that, because we've had so many applicants, you know, I'm interested if people are listening, are really interested in living in some sort of community house and don't know how to do it. And obviously my house is full and I'm not sure about Kunst House, but you know, get in touch with us. You know, I'm sure on the website we'll have our information and reach out to us. And I already have, from those 10 people who applied, 4 of them are interested, and we're having a little online dialogue, email chain going on, like how can we kind of create another community and kind of serve that need and expand.
Right.
Yeah, so how many are there? We've talked about Mac House. We've talked about Quinn's House, which has multiple locations, right? How many locations?
So we first opened the Walnut Hills building, which I would say to the previous question is true co-living, shared rooms, shared kitchen, shared everything. So that was the first one. And then we're renovating 2 buildings in Over the Rhine, a little bit north of Findlay Market. And those, I would say, are more co-housing. You have your own kitchen, your own bathroom, but then there's common space and regular events. So those will be number 2 and 3. And then we're working on a few more sort of in that area for next year.
Okay. What about around Cincinnati? How many of these types of houses that may not be under your direct purview? How many are around?
I think our communities are kind of unique in the sense that there you can have any job and apply and move in. Outside of that, there's several who are surrounded around like AmeriCorps or surrounded around, there's a Vincentian Volunteer Corps. You work at St. Vincent
and
Paul.
And they've been guests here.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah. And then there's a co-housing group with Jim Shanks, been doing for 30, 40 years.
At Eco Village.
Yeah, right, Eco Village. Yep. And that's like more co-housing. So, and when I first moved here, I was like, oh, that'd be great to live in. But I'm like, oh, I don't want to commit to buying a house right now and living there by myself. And so this model, I think what we're doing is it's kind of, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know of that many other ones.
Yeah, and my place is almost always full.
Right.
And so it's great that you're serving a broader audience, broader need.
So you were mentioning, you know, wait a minute, Nick, I think you were, somebody was mentioning 50-year-olds and 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
Where
we've had that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There is also around the country some real interest in senior housing, the Beacon Hill Village model, which has spread, which isn't necessarily co-housing or co-living. It's almost a sophisticated concierge service.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people in Cincinnati very interested in that. But it's a way of helping people work out their lives together. What do you see for senior citizens? How might this, because that's a growing part of our population.
Right. Yeah, I think co-housing, co-living, whatever it's called, is really great for people in a new situation, which is often people whose kids have just gone away to college or are recently divorced. I mean, we've had a few examples of people separated from their partner and they need a place to live and they're sort of maybe reinventing or rethinking their life in their 40s or 50s. So I think certainly, you know, even senior citizens in retirement, you know, two people or somebody living on their own, I think co-living, co-housing is a great way, you know, to meet new people in your age bracket, but also, you know, have younger energy around, even have kids around. And then it becomes much more even of like a family environment, which seems to be happening at the Mac House, you know, intergenerational, older people taking care of kids.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely an opportunity. Like when we grow up, like we envision our whole life to be in some sort of co-living situation. And when we, you know, age, we envision, you know, possibly having some of our rooms that are rented out possibly for free. You know, it's like, hey, if you help us cook or something or help us clean.
You mean when you started the community?
No, now my wife and I talk about that. Like okay. Our vision of 20, 30, 40 years down
you
the road.
You see this as a long-term lifetime commitment.
We don't see this, oh, let's do this for now and then stop. Like we want this to be, you know, we've just enjoyed these last, you know, this whole time. So for people who are currently, you know, in senior age and they have open bedrooms, there could be an opportunity to think about allowing those spaces to be rented out maybe at a very affordable rate and have people in there. And that obviously right. The challenges are people having their own space and being used to have those space and welcoming a different person and their personality, different cleanliness factors. So there's definitely challenges, but opportunity as well.
And I think you'll have, as you mentioned, like you've already learned a lot in the last 8 years about, you know, setting up a system where it might be two totally random people that are coming together. But if there's a system, okay, we have to meet every week, we have to get out our issues. I think that could really work. And another group, which we had a lot of interest in that I did not expect early on, was parents who have children that are disabled or have disabilities. Because I think it's similar to senior citizens, they're often all put in a place together, which isn't necessarily the best thing. You know, living in a senior home, live in a home where everyone there has a disability of some sort. And that, you know, can be positive, but often is not.
Isolating.
Yeah, isolating. And so they were hoping that, you know, they were looking to gain insight, I think, or even have their children live in one of our houses where they would interact with you know, all different types of people.
How is all this related to what was happening in the 1960s with communal living?
Right.
Yeah, I think it's, contemporary, just revisiting that in some ways, you know, people just wanting to live their life in a different way that may be more meaningful and just kind of pursuing that. So I think it's
maybe it does seem similar. It seems like a revival of ideas that have been around. I mean, certainly, say, hippie ideas from 60s, 70s on. But even before that, you know, a family unit sort of growing old in the same house, I mean, that still exists certainly in the U.S. and around the world of, you know, three generations all living under one roof.
Multi-generation.
Yeah, exactly.
How much interaction, if any, have you had with a place like Grailville, which has variations of this and has been around for a long time? Have you, either of you been in connection with Grailville?
I know that in Radico Village brought them to come up and speak, but I have not had any connections directly. The only time I might have read about them was in the Intentional Communities magazine that I get quarterly. They talk about all the different national communities or international rather, and I learned through that specifically. Yeah.
It's close by. It's in Loveland.
Yeah.
It's so, John, what is the biggest thing that you think you're going to be working on in the near future?
Yeah, I think for us, it's you know, if we want this to grow, it's making sure the community is strong and people really enjoy living there, and we're delivering on the promise of community, and then also finding an economic model that works, you know, on a, you know, moving forward. Because we, you know, Cincinnati especially, and if we'd like this to continue in sort of Midwest cities. You know, if we don't have the economic pressure of necessarily the coast in terms of housing prices, you know, how do we make the economic model work? And that's something we're really focused on.
Okay. And finding the people who want to
Finding the people. Is there a large enough pool that are interested in this? Can we deliver something that people are, I mean, through word of mouth? I mean, I think that's an amazing, you know, 10 applications for one open room just from word of mouth. So it seems like through 8 years, you've figured out how to execute on the idea really well. And we're honestly, earlier than that, we're trying to figure out how to maybe do the same thing.
Nick, same question. What are you going to be working on in the near future? What do you see as things that you want to work through?
Oh, just, you know, continuing to strengthen the community we're at right now, you know, and serving and helping other people, wanting to grow and create this, because I do think it's such a valuable thing for people mm-hmm. and to grow in society. And so I'd love to help others to do it. When I first started, I wanted to kind of buy all these houses and keep doing it, you know. And then my friends who I started with them, they said, no, let's slow down, like grow what you're doing there first. And, you know, in hindsight, it was really good advice, because, you know, I really do believe we have something really strong going on in our house. And I do think it's powerful to have, you know, other people kind of being there to help manage the cleanliness, you know. But you're doing it in a different way, where you're kind of relieving that load of cleaning, you know.
Figuring out.
That's a different way. Yeah. I didn't think about that one.
Right. You two guys can share ideas and figure out which one you want to do.
I think we have something to learn.
So I want to thank both Nick and John for being here today.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.